Of the Pack
Podcast. The thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the final edition of a game version of Pulse of the Pack for the 2016-2017 season. I am Jacob Westendorf, your host, here to discuss the drubbing that was the 2017 NFC Championship game. Joined with me is my co-host, Jason Perrone, in an equally somber mood, I bet. Jason, how are you?
Worse. Way worse. There's no way that these moods are equally somber. I didn't tweet hardly at all yesterday, and there's a good reason for that. It's because I didn't watch much of the game live. I knew early on where things were headed, and so I stepped away and did everybody a favor and left my petulant, upbeat lollipop self off in a corner where I could not make things any worse. But rest assured, as I usually say that we're doing okay even after a loss. I'm not. I'm crappy and it sucks.
It does. Somebody asked me during the game, because obviously, Jason, as you said, it was 31-0 at one point. Quite honestly, I've forgotten some of it by now. What's worse, this or, Seattle, Arizona, games like that? And to me, the answer now is it's pretty easy. I would prefer what happened yesterday, because I can just accept what happens in the second quarter instead of having hope. And both suck. I mean, I'm not, this isn't a, we're choosing between being punched in the nuts or kicked in the nuts. Sorry for the vulgarity of that, but I mean, that's the best analogy I can use there. There's really no good way to do it, but if you're asking which one I prefer, that's the way that I would look at it. I mean, I kind of looked at it from that point as, the game is over at 31-0. It's just kind of sitting there and watching the last, 2.5 quarters, 2 quarters, whatever it was, of the 2016 Packers season, simply because I know, there won't be any live football from that team now for another 8 months with whomever it is that we get to see that they open up against, and we'll find that out in April. Here's the analogy that I've come up with for kind of what the last 2 weeks were. The Green Bay Packers are, this year's version of the Packers are kind of the kid in school who's, they're kind of the middle of the pack kid. They're not the high school quarterback. They're not the popular kid. They just kind of blend in, stuff like that. And the Cowboys game is like an example of the Packers finally working up the courage to ask out the prettiest girl in school and Mason Crosby making that field goal to beat the Cowboys is that girl saying yes. And boys that are listening to this show that have ever gotten a guy that's out, or a guy, have gotten a girl that's out of their league, understand what that feeling is like. It's exciting. It's a great feeling. It's kind of like some nerves after that, some butterflies that go into everything. Kind of, probably kind of how you felt as a fan after this game ended. Exciting, jubilation, great, then nerves for this NFC Championship game. And then the NFC Championship game is the equivalent of that date that the girl accepted happening and you just crapping your pants on the date. That's the analogy that I've come up with for what transpired on Sunday. As far as the actual game goes, you know, Jason, usually the way these shows go is, you know, we break down what happened on offense, what happened on defense, you know, kind of the course of the game. I don't see a ton of value in doing that because the Packers just got smoked. They didn't do anything well. The offense didn't score until it was 31-0. Mason Crosby missed a field goal on the first possession. Aaron Murkowski fumbled on the second possession. And they just didn't really do anything through most of the day. The defense, it was kind of what you expected. I mean, we expected this game to be a shootout. And with the expectation of it being a shootout, that means you expect the Falcons to put up points. So the Falcons putting up points was not unexpected. So I don't see a ton of value doing it that way. So we're going to go about this a different way. So I have some questions that come from the game itself yesterday. So now the season is over. And I don't think, Jason, even in as bad of a mood as you're in today, I don't think you would argue that the way this season transpired wasn't fun. But ultimately, the Packers fell short. They didn't win the Super Bowl. So the question that everyone asks at the end of every season is, do you consider it a failure? My answer to the question is, you know, winning the division matters. Climbing out of the hole that they got themselves into by starting the season 4-6, that matters. The run that they went on to win 8 games in a row, that matters. The Hail Mary against the New York Giants before halftime matters. The dramatic win over the Dallas Cowboys, that matters. And that some of the plays in that game will forever live in lore, in Packers lore. But the reality is, you know, the name of this city, the name, what they call Green Bay, Wisconsin, is Title Town, USA. And that doesn't mean division title town. And Mike McCarthy has said very loudly at the beginning of the season that we don't hang banners for division titles. You know, we hang world championship banners. And the Packers were 8 quarters away from the Super Bowl, and they got drubbed. So it sounds harsh, but, you know, it's either you win the Super Bowl or you don't. And, you know, it's whatever saying you want to use. You know, if you ain't first, you're last. Second place is only the first loser, whatever way you want to look at it. But the Packers, you know, this isn't like an unexpected run where, you know, a team of tryhards or unexpected. I'm trying to think of like an example in recent memory where like something like this would have been acceptable. But when you have a team that has a future Hall of Famer at quarterback, I mean, this is the kind of stuff, these are the kind of games you expect to be playing in. So, yes, losing before the Super Bowl, not winning the Super Bowl, that's a failure in my mind. So, yes, I would say it was fun. I'm not going to argue I didn't have fun with it. But ultimately, at the end of the day, this is about jewelry and this is about trophies, and the Packers didn't do either one of those things. So, Jason, I talked a bunch. What's your feeling on this whole thing?
I am in agreement. I think I've seen so many different takes on this over the last day, and I can appreciate all of them. I can appreciate those who just want to revel in the 8-game win streak and the 2-month bliss that we felt on the way to an NFC Championship game that nobody thought we were going to go to, Jacob. Your analogy is probably pretty accurate. You know, The girl says yes. The girl that's out of your league says yes. And you're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is actually happening. Because when the Packers beat the Cowboys, how many of us actually said, I can't believe this is happening or it's happened? I mentioned last week after we did the show, I fell to the floor in a heap and I bawled because it was Dallas. There were so many things that I went through myself in the 90s with the Favre teams, never beating Dallas, on the road. Side note, Packers are 3-0 in that building. Dallas Cowboys fans are crying yesterday. They would have given the Falcons a better game. Well, you know what? Take care of home. You know, protect your yard. But that's all I got to say about Dallas. I mean, yeah, when you have, and I know that we're going to talk about this particular topic a little down the line here. When you have the talent that the Packers have, and everybody wants to point to how bad they were on defense. I've seen comparisons to high school defensive backs were out there trying to guard Julio Jones, who, by the way, could not have been bigger on a bigger stage. I don't think Darrelle Revis in his prime or Deion Sanders in his prime locks down Julio Jones yesterday. The man was on another level. And for those of us who wonder what opposing fans must feel like when Aaron Rodgers is having one of his otherworldly games, I would imagine that that's probably a taste of it, because there was nothing that Green Bay was going to do that was going to stop that guy from doing what he did. And I didn't see a bunch of it live simply because I didn't want any of the images of it burned into my head. I did happen to catch some of the highlights, and he was amazing. But on the offensive side of the ball, with the offensive line that they had, and I know that they played like garbage yesterday and Corey Linsley was terrible and everybody was injured and LaTroy Guyon was playing guard at the end of the game, which is laughable to me. It's vintage Packers bullshit, for lack of a better term. I know that we don't use those words on this show very often, but this is the NFC Championship game. The season is over and it was a loss, so I'm going to ask you to allow me one. When you have an Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, and everybody's out there playing, and Jordy Nelson had a touchdown catch despite the extra 30 pounds of Kevlar that he was carrying around just to play in this game courageously as he did. Yes, you need to win. You need to win. You can beat any team. I don't want to hear they had no chance. Mike McCarthy said in his post-game show, and it's the title of our show tonight, well, we ran into a buzzsaw. Well, you knew you were running into a buzzsaw. You knew a buzzsaw was coming at you when you went to Atlanta. So what the hell was your game plan? What was your plan, Mike McCarthy, to get your team up for the second biggest game any football team can play in an NFL season? You're on the doorstep of another Super Bowl. I don't care who your cornerbacks are. You got here. You got to show up. You got to play. You got to be competitive. And not only were the Packers did they lose, but they were not competitive at all. Even when there were some people that thought that they had a glimmer of hope late in the game, oh, this is Aaron Rodgers, you know, they could really pull this off. And it, maybe mathematically and statistically it was possible. And with the number of Hail Marys that Aaron Rodgers has thrown in the last 18 months, yes, it is even more likely that if anybody is going to lead their team back from that situation to tie or somehow take the lead in this game, it would be Aaron Rodgers. But they weren't ready. They weren't ready and they weren't prepared. So when you ask me if the season is a failure, yes, it's a failure, because you didn't win a championship, because you could win a championship, because you have the X factor that every Super Bowl team needs in order to get to and win a Super Bowl, and there are very few exceptions, and I don't want to talk about Trent Dilfer on the show. It's called a quarterback. It is called an elite quarterback. And Aaron Rodgers was playing the most elitist type of quarterbacking that we have seen from him over the last 2 months that we can cite over his entire career since he became a starter in 2008. And so with that, yes, I did expect to win this game yesterday, despite some people telling me the Packers had no chance. They didn't, so it was a colossal failure. I'm disappointed in Mason Crosby for missing a field goal and failing to answer Atlanta's first score and keep some momentum on Green Bay's side. I'm disgusted with Aaron Ripkowski for fumbling for the first time all season at the worst possible time, which was complete 2011 Green Bay Packers versus New York Giants type of football that we saw in that game. Garbage that wasn't happening all season long all of a sudden haunts this team at the worst possible time and is one of the reasons why their season is over with. Mike McCarthy, how many more times are you going to get your team deep into the playoffs against a great team on the road? I understand players with the flu, guys are injured, falling like flies, dropping all over the place. Lane Taylor goes out early. Kentrell Bryce, first play of the game, of course, gets hurt. But when are you going to get your team up for a big game? Because in the late game, and I know that many of you right now are probably utterly sighing, whatever noise you're making that is annoying or expressing annoyance, in the late game, we saw the New England Patriots, guided by Bill Belichick. Now, granted, they were at home, but they came up against a pretty good Pittsburgh Steelers team. And how many people had heard of half of New England's offense before the middle of this season? And they're wide open all night long. Hogan, all night long. They do it. It can be done. Everybody gets so tired of being compared to the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick. And they're cheaters, and they have their own style of doing it. And I said today on Twitter, I'm 99% sure that the guy that pulled the fire alarm in the Pittsburgh Steelers hotel was probably somehow deployed by the New England Patriots. And, yes, I'm dead serious when I say that. I'm not joking at all. I wouldn't put that past Bill Belichick for 1 second. And you know what? Guess how much investigation the NFL is going to do into it? None. I'm not suggesting the Packers become cheaters, but you know what? Try to win. Do something better to win. Mike McCarthy failed to get his team ready for this game. So, yes, to me, the season is a failure for that reason, and that reason alone, because I believed, I expected them to win. They didn't, and it sucked.
Expected to win is definitely a way to put it because, I mean, Jason, both of us picked them to win the game. We did two shows last week, one of them right in the afterglow of the Cowboys game, and we both picked them then, and we kind of gave ourselves a chance at a mulligan by doing another show. And both of us kind of stuck to our guns and said we're picking the Packers. So that's where expecting them to win comes into play. Now, this is where I think everything comes into play because everyone, I think what you did a good job there of your diatribe, for lack of a better term, is instead of blaming just, you know, one person, I think you did a good job of, because what everybody will do at the end of a game like that is they'll say, well, get rid of this person and that'll make everything better. Or, you know, get rid of the coordinator, get rid of the head coach, get rid of whatever. And instead of doing that, you know, you brought up the personnel failures because that happened. Coaching failures, that happened because the defense did look disorganized. The offense looked shook after they didn't score early. And there was a lot of pressure on them, and they didn't handle it well. And that's just the reality of what happened yesterday. And that's how we'll close the book on the first topic for this show, and we will get back to that. We do have a guest, however, and we will bring him on right now. We have Cody Bauer from Cheesehead TV. With the season ending, that brings about a look forward, and we're going to look forward a little bit here. Cody is our draft guy here at Cheesehead TV. He's done all kinds of other stuff. We've had him on before. Personal friend of mine and a friend of the show. So, Cody, if you can hear me, welcome, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you guys very much for having me on.
Cody, so before we get going too quick, talk to us about, you know, where can we find you? What are you doing now? I know you've done a wide range of projects just in the last 2 years or so. So, and I think, you know, we can kind of make a small announcement about kind of a plan that you and I have for this offseason.
Yeah, well, right now, I guess I don't want to call it a hiatus, but with the off-season approaching, I'm going to be back at Cheesehead TV doing other draft content. I'll be doing some scouting reports for them, some mock drafts, just kind of the fun stuff that draft Knicks like to read about, and it's going to be, of course, you know, geared towards how the Packers will look at the off-season. And then, yeah, our announcement. Go ahead, Jacob. You do the honors. It's pretty exciting.
It is pretty exciting. Cody Bauer, obviously, who's with us, Ross Uglum, formerly of From the Benches, and myself will be doing – last year we did a small trial on this. We're trying to do a full off-season of it. It'll be called Packers War Room, and we'll do a podcast either weekly, bi-weekly. There's some small kinks to be worked out yet, but the three of us will be doing a show, and it'll be all off-season long, talking mostly draft, but some free agency stuff too. So the three of us are excited to do that. And bring that to you. It was popular last year when we did it right before the draft, so that's exciting to have the three of us back together to do that. So, Cody, we just got done talking about kind of the first part of really the end of the season. So real quick, I guess I can take your opinion real fast. Is the Packers, obviously, 4-6, win 8 in a row, get to the NFC Championship game, get blown off the field by the Atlanta Falcons. So before I get into kind of moving on to that, what I want to know, what we were talking about, do you consider this season a failure based on the fact that they didn't win a Super Bowl?
You know, it's hard for me to use strong as word as failure. I thought, Jason, your description was on point. I understand, you know, the disappointment, but that's probably more my word for it. After the slow start, you know, everyone was fire McCarthy, fire Capers, fire everybody, and then to rattle off 8 in a row was just a really special run. It, and again, disappointment would be my word, to fail to show up in the NFC Championship game. That's a little discouraging, but overall, I don't know if I would go as bad as failure.
Fair assessment as well. Now, you know, the draft is kind of your thing. We talked about it when the draft class was completed. Now that we have a full season officially in the books, what rookie from 2016 do you think made the most impact on this season?
You know, when you had sent me that question, I thought that would just be an easy answer, quick spit somebody out. But, man, the more and more I thought about it, I had a hard time coming up with one that made the biggest impact. I guess, you know, each had their spurts and their moments throughout the year. I'd say, though, overall, Kenny Clark was probably the most impactful. It's tough for a nose tackle to really impact a game and show up on the stat sheets. But I think, you know, as the season progressed, he was probably the most impactful, as, you know, Blake Martinez didn't see the field as much and some of the other guys were a little inconsistent. But I'd say Kenny Clark, you know, his arrow is going to be pointing up going into next year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I have to jump in and empathize a little bit here with Cody, because – He's doing double duty right now. So he's with us, but he's also got his kids that he is entertaining. And as a father, I know that that is no small task. So I give you a virtual high five for double dipping here and spending some time with us, sir. I appreciate it. And it's good to have you back on the show. So if we take impact out, like Jacob had just said, you know, who was the most impactful rookie? So if we take impact out, which rookie then would you say do you think improved the most this past season?
I think the answer that would be most obvious is Geronimo Allison. And, you know, as an undrafted free agent, he really wasn't expected to do anything this year except for maybe make the practice squad. But there he was in the preseason making plays. And then when called upon towards the end of the year, I mean, he stepped in and the offense didn't miss a beat. I mean, Cobb was out, Allison stepped in, and you know, things went kumbaya for the rest of the year until Cobb came back. It would be hard to say anyone else other than him, although I do want to give a little dap to Kentrell Bryce, who, again, another undrafted guy. He stepped in when Burnett was out in the playoff game, and, you know, despite the dropped interception, you know, you saw improvements from him. Even the first special teams hit in yesterday's game, you know, he put a wall up on the guy and unfortunately knocked himself out. However, I think those two undrafted guys, you know, really impressed, exceeded expectations. And you know, again, I think going into next year, you can expect both those guys to make the team.
One guy that came to mind when I asked the question or when I wrote down the question earlier was Dean Lowry, because you know, he kind of did some stuff toward the end of the year. And I think that between that and the second suspension, but, you know, talented big guys tend to get second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, 10th, 27th chances in the NFL, especially in the NFL. Dean Lowry's improvement, at least in my opinion, kind of helped the Packers eventually say, you know what, forget it, when it came to Mike Pennell. Was he considered at all in the answer to your question, or did you just go straight to Allison and Bryce?
You know, no, he was definitely a consideration. And as you know, I really liked that pick, and I know he's your boy from your hometown. He wasn't on the field as much as those other guys. So as far as impact goes, I didn't, you know, list him, but you're absolutely right. There was, you know, he made Pennell expendable essentially. And I think you have a base DN in our 3-4. However, you know, we just don't play the base that often, so you didn't see him on the field all that much. But you're right, when he was out there, he certainly made some plays.
So moving forward now, that's, you know, less about 2016 now, more towards 2017 now that the season is over. A lot of people will point to a lot of stuff. You know, Cody, had we done this show when the Packers were 4-6, we could have talked about a wide variety of needs ranging from offense or defense. Now I got a feeling that we're going to stay on the defensive side of the ball. But what do you think is the biggest need for the Packers going forward? And maybe after the biggest need, like, what are the second two after that?
Sure. I think my wife, who doesn't really know football, could tell you that. Why are there guys always wide open when they're running routes? You know, cornerback is clearly, to me, one of the top needs. And that, you know, speaks to Shields' inability to stay healthy and avoid concussions. But, you know, it became quite clear that Gunther should not be a number one corner. Damaris Randall, whether we want to make the excuse that he's playing through injuries and, you know, cost him his confidence. Rollins battling injuries and inconsistency this year. To just a couple no-name guys who really didn't have any business being anywhere else other than on the practice squad. I think cornerback is clearly the pressing need. You hope that the young guys, Rollins and Randall, will develop and take a step forward. But, you know, with what you saw this year and particularly towards the end of the year, you can't bank on either of those guys being, you know, good starters. So cornerback for me is number one. And number two, you know, this is really predicated on free agency and, you know, just lack of production at the outside linebacker spot. Beginning of the year, Nick Perry, you know, I probably tweeted 10 times how much money he's making himself. And, you know, then his hand injury happened, and he was just a little bit more than just a guy. Clay Matthews is, you know, essentially an overpaid, you know, guy right now. Again, he's battling through the shoulder injury. And then you have Jayron Elliott, who's also a free agent, and Dayton Jones, who's a free agent, former first-round pick, who's just really – never materialized into the playmaker I think Thompson envisioned. However, you know, he had a position change, so again, a learning curve could be an award to him. But these all just sound like, you know, excuses, and maybe it is more than an excuse because these guys really are playing hurt. But, you know, outside linebacker to me is need number two, and depending on who gets signed and or if Peppers walks away, it could become, you know, essentially a number one need. Obviously, a good pass rush is going to make your secondary that much better.
So, Cody, I have that same wife who makes those astute observations as to why there's only opposing players on the TV screen and there are no Green Bay Packers around them. So I can certainly understand when that is going on and how much fun it is to answer that question when it's posed in such a minor level like that. But You kind of led me right into my next question. You mentioned some of the pending free agents that the Packers have coming up. You know, and before that, you know, you talked about Randall and Rollins, and if there's two guys who are creating some very, very long threads of discussion on Twitter, it's Quentin Rollins and Damaris Randall. A lot of question marks about those two guys, and with them both being high picks, regardless of what the Packers do in their front office and who takes over, if Ted Thompson sticks around, I think they're going to be part of the plan for at least the next couple seasons. So we have to kind of hope that 23 and 24 develop a little bit and grow a little bit. I think Damaris Randall needs to grow up. Frankly, I think he's a little full of himself, and I think he's got in his head that he's a little more marquee than he is. And Quentin Rollins would be great if he could just stay healthy, but getting back to the pending free agencies, you know, you mentioned most of the guys I wanted to ask you about, because I want to kind of have you just maybe rank them in order of importance that the Packers should look to re-sign them. You know, one guy that you mentioned in particular, Nick Perry. I feel bad for Nick Perry because here, like you said, he was setting himself up for a nice payday finally. You know, he's been on 2 1-year prove-it deals in a row after the Packers didn't pick up his fifth-year option. So he's never really gotten his big payday. I mean, he's made some decent money, but he's a first-round pick from 2012, and he still has yet to sign his first big deal. And he was on his way to doing that. And that hand injury was really a bummer for Green Bay because he was playing with that club cast out there, and he still made somewhat of an impact with it, but obviously not the same as he might have otherwise. So the Packers might have maybe gotten a little stroke of luck there in terms of their ability to bring him back if they want to. But so Nick Perry, as you mentioned, Dayton Jones, you got Jaron Elliott, Eddie Lacy, don't want to forget about Eddie Lacy. You got Micah Hyde, TJ Lang, JC Treader, and Jared Cook. So of those guys, I know that's a long list to remember, but of those guys in your mind, what's the order of importance there?
Sure. Well, first, I think you have to check to make sure TJ Lang is okay. I didn't hear anything as of yet as far as his injury goes, but I like that veteran presence on the offensive line. I think he's part of the rock in the middle that I would like to see brought back. He would be up there. He's, you know, on the wrong side of 30, so I think a short-term, you know, decent contract for him would certainly be, you know, affordable and in the cards. I'd rank him up high. Treader, I think he's also up there, maybe not number two. I think number two, and this may surprise you, is going to be Jared Cook. I think, you know, it was clear that when he came back, the offense was completely different. And we'll get into the draft, you know, a little later in the show and throughout the offseason. But it's a good year to draft a tight end as well, but you don't really want to rely on a rookie. And I think what Cook brought to the offense, you know, speaks volumes to, you know, Rodgers complimenting him and really how the offense clicked going forward. So probably one Lang, two Cook, three, I'm going to have to go Nick Perry. And I want that deal to be nothing like, you know, I don't think he's going to get Melvin Ingram type money or JPP or other of the premier pass rushing free agents this year. But, you know, somewhere along the lines of, you know, around the $9 million, hopefully a little cheaper than that. You know, he has trouble staying healthy. So if you can get him around that mark, I think, you know, that's a good deal to lock him up for a few years. And then for some reason, Micah Hyde kind of is the forgotten man. And he certainly has his deficiencies on the field. He, when he covers tight ends one-on-one, he's really never that sticky. But for whatever reason, he just makes plays when you need him. And I think his versatility on the back end, his ability to play safety, slot, outside, I think that's going to be something that's valuable to, you know, Thompson and McCarthy going forward. So I think I would put him up there. So I'd go Lang, Cook, Perry, Hyde, and I think you can get Dayton for a cheap one-year prove-it deal, kind of like you did with Perry this year. No, I don't think anyone's going to be shelling out big money for him. He's kind of a man without a position at this point, but, you know, he's shown flashes that you'd like to see where, you know, he's still a younger guy. He could hopefully develop a little bit more as an outside linebacker, but, you know, those are a few of my top guys. You notice
something
how I didn't fit you in there, right? I mean, I think a lot of people are all in the same boat. The demand for him isn't going to be extremely high. His weight issues are well documented. I think, you know, he's probably most valuable to Green Bay. And again, that'd be a one-year kind of prove-it deal. You come back in shape, you know, do your P90X all off season, have a little 1-2 combo with him and Montgomery. Wouldn't be a bad backfield going into next year.
Well, I was going to start with JC Treader, but I guess I'll start with Eddie Lacy since you just went with that. And yeah, I agree. If the Packers are going to bring Lacy back, that's fine if it's on a 1-year deal. And I'm thinking, my thinking on that is it's a 1-year deal and it's with the understanding, maybe he doesn't know it, but it's with the understanding within the front office that this is the last year that Eddie Lacy's in Green Bay. It's just, I said it at the time he got injured, whether it's health, whether it's weight issues, whether it's commitment issues, because, you know, you're talking about a guy who missed his curfew in 2015, and it was a guy that they cut Alonzo Harris because the organization was reportedly worried that he was influencing Eddie Lacy. And, you know, that Alonzo Harris is not a guy that should be influencing Eddie Lacy when it should be the other way around, if anything else. But whether it's one of those many, many things, That's not a guy I feel confident investing a lot of money into. And then you just add in his play style, where Eddie Lacy's not the type that has a running style that's conducive to a long career. So that's where I'm starting with him. As far as J.C. Treader, my thought on him is, you know, everybody just kind of has this thought of you have to pick one of Lang or Treader. And I know free agency is unpredictable, and you got these weird guys that get a lot of money. I remember one year when Brian Bulaga got his deal, Jeremy Parnell got a huge deal that offseason, and he's not near the player that Brian Bulaga is when he's healthy. So I get that, and I get line play across the league is bad. And I know Treader's younger, and I know he's played okay, but my counter-argument to him is I know T.J. Lang just left the game yesterday with an injury, and he was injured twice this year, and he's on the wrong side of 30. But the other argument I have is Treader has been relied on two of the last three seasons to be a starter for the Packers, and he's gotten injured both of those seasons for a significant period of time. That's something I think you have to consider, and I think it's something that could work in the Packers' favor to kind of keep that offensive line depth around. I think that it's at least feasible that the Packers could keep both of those players in Green Bay. And we can actually obviously talk more about this as March gets around. We just kind of wanted to get a general overview of the offseason going on. Cody, this is a strong class, reportedly at least, for edge defenders and cornerbacks. And you mentioned that as your number one and number two need. And, you know, depending on how the Nick Perry, Dayton Jones, Jaron Elliott, Julius Peppers, even to some degree Clay Matthews situation goes, I'm not suggesting that they'll cut Clay Matthews, but, I mean, you got to wonder how much of an impact player is that guy at this point? Those are needs that could be interchangeable as one and two. At least you can argue that at some point, depending on how March plays out in Green Bay. But it's good news from the Packers' standpoint that those are strong classes at those. So do you have any favorites at those positions as of right now?
Yeah, I do. It's early in the process. My grades aren't finalized on anybody by any means, but there are certainly a few guys that stick out to me. Something I've had a lot of fun doing this offseason, and we'll get more into it on the War Room podcast, is, you know, I've kind of looked at Ted Thompson's draft history of size of guys, testing ability, and kind of what he tends to look for. So I've narrowed down, you know, the list of corners and outside linebackers I think are going to appeal to Thompson. Now, of course, if Elliot Wolf or whoever steps in, then it'll all be for nothing. But, you know, just looking at a few guys, I really like the two guys from Ohio State, Jayron Conley and Marshawn Lattimore. They both fit the mold, the size that Ted Thompson generally looks for in a corner. I think both are going to test pretty well. And both have some length where they can play on the outside. You know, if Rollins does, you know, step up, you know, he's going to be the slot guy, I would imagine. And, you know, we're going to need that guy on the outside that you'd like to lock down the number one of the opposing team. I'm not sure that either of those guys will be available at 29. It's possible. You mentioned the depth of the cornerback class. So one of those two guys could drop. The other kid I like a lot is Quincy Wilson from Florida. He seems to have a kind of a wide range right now of where he's projected to go. I know Matt Miller at Bleacher Report is really high on him. I'm almost as high on him as well. So the chances he might not fall. Testing is going to be important for all these cornerbacks. You know, a lot of them do have the size that, you know, teams are coveting at this point, but, you know, what's going to separate, you know, them from each other is going to be how they test at the combine. And there's another kid named Azubi from Colorado, and forgive my, you know, enunciation of that right now, but he's down in Mobile this week at the Senior Bowl. Another kid, Tre'Davious White from LSU, is down at the Senior Bowl. I'm looking forward to seeing how they lock up against the wide receivers down there. It'll be a good week for either one of those two to step up and cement themselves and potentially first round, definitely day two statuses. So, again, those two are definitely in play at 29. Tre'Davious White could move up a little bit, but the list of corners I just gave you, I mean, that's already five right there that are potential first rounders, which is, you know, a deep class. However, with cornerbacks, as we know, there's a learning curve. It takes time. It's hard to imagine, unless you're Jalen Ramsey, that you get thrown out there on day one and, you know, turn into a bona fide stud and can lock up opposing teams once. So, of course, you know, expectations should be tempered for any corner that is drafted early. However, you just want to see the tools and the potential to be there. As far as outside linebacker, I'm going to sound like a homer when I say this, but I'm a huge T.J. Watt guy. Having watched him, Jacob, you know, second half against Michigan, he was unblockable. I believe I tweeted out best player on the field in that game at one point. I love everything that he stands for, represents. Call me the homer, call me whatever you want. I know he has great athleticism. I've seen him take over games. I've seen him set the edge in the run game. For being as raw as he is in the position, he does use his hands incredibly well. He's got a tenacity to learn on the field. He's got a nonstop motor, you know, whatever other white guy term you want to throw out there for him, he has it. I'm a big fan of his, and I think he could certainly come in and challenge to be a starter at an outside linebacker spot, but most certainly, if not challenged, be part of a rotation, which would be ideal depending on who all departs in free agency. A couple other pass rushers that I kind of like, and you can speak more to him, Jacob, is Taco Charlton. And he doesn't exactly have the ideal physique for a 3-4 outside linebacker. He's more in the 270-plus range, kind of more of a Nick Perry. But there's something about his game, too, that it just seems like he's scratching the surface. And if he's allowed to pin his ears back, I think he could be one of the better pass rushers in this draft class. And both those players, I think, are right around that draft range, late first, early second.
Okay, so obviously it's January 23rd, Cody, so we're not going to hold you to it. But if you're picking right now and the Packers stay at 29, they come around in the first round, who would you have them taking out of maybe some of all those guys that you picked or maybe somebody you didn't even mention?
I will go O.J. Howard, tight end, Alabama. If for some reason he's on the board when we're picking – and I don't know if it's possible in my mock that I'm going to be dropping soon. It's not. He's not there. I just, you know, dream of a scenario where O.J. Howard is the future Packers tight end. His athletic ability, his run after catch, his size, his blocking, even if we have Cook for another year or two, you know, for O.J. Howard to learn behind him would be ideal. And to run two tight end sets with those athletic marvels, I think could present a lot of challenges for defenses.
Oh, that would make me so happy. I have long dreamed, even when the Packers had JerMichael Finley, I've never understood how a coach like Mike McCarthy can love tight ends as much as he does and have just unathletic drivel behind his start, or even just not even behind his starting tight end. I mean, you're talking about, like, Richard Rodgers was the starting tight end in 2015, so... I mean, I would love O.J. Howard. I know that a lot of fans would probably get upset because that's an offensive player and not a defensive player. But if O.J. Howard is there, I think fans would watch a couple highlight tapes and learn to love him very quickly. I think that I've liked this kid since last year. Cody, I think we talked about him during the national championship game. We were talking about Jordan Leggett and O.J. Howard potentially as tight ends for the Packers in 2016, and then both of them said they were going back to school, which didn't make any sense to me. But whatever, neither one of them thankfully suffered an injury that could potentially hurt their draft stock, which, as we saw, happened to several guys, including my guy from Michigan, as you mentioned, Jake. Well, you didn't mention him specifically, but Jake Butt tore his ACL for a second time. So that's unfortunate for him, but like you said, we won't hold you to that. There's other guys, I'm sure, that'll pop up, pop down. The combine will do some things that'll move guys up and down, as you mentioned as well. So, Cody, thanks for joining us. I'm sure we'll have you again. And as I said, looking forward to doing War Room with you as we get started on that here in the next couple weeks. Follow him, guys. He's on Twitter. At C. Bauer NFL Draft, and he'll have all kinds of stuff on Cheesehead TV. So now the season's over. It's kind of his time of year. He'll have all kinds of stuff for you. He's got all kinds of good stuff, mock draft, scouting reports, everything going. Cody, thanks again for joining us, and I will talk with you soon.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Have a good one.
That was Cody Bauer again from Cheesehead TV's NFL Draft coverage, talking a little bit about 2017. So, you guys are staying with us here. It's kind of like an ADD episode of this podcast because we're all over the place. But we went from 2016, this season, now we went from that to looking forward to now we're going to look back again. So, Jason, now that we're back to looking back, I guess, the Packers gave up – this is – I don't know whether to laugh or cry at this stat. It was, like, really close, excuse me, to 77%. Was the conversion rate for third down against the defense in the postseason. That is an NFL record and not in a good way. So simply what I want to know is what are your feelings on that? And mine are, that is unbelievable. And listen, I can't blame solely Dom Capers for what happened yesterday because I understand that, you know, Ladarius Gunter should never be asked to cover Julio Jones. But at the same time, one thing that really frustrates me about this Packers organization and their structure as a whole is it seems like every year they're consistently asking people to do things they should never be asked to do. For example, Nate Palmer was a below-average 4-3 FCS defensive end in college. He was a 3-4 starting inside linebacker last year before he got injured. That should never happen. That guy should never be an option as an inside linebacker. You sign someone off the street. You grab someone off the practice squad. You grab someone off of somebody else's practice squad. Whatever. But that should never happen. Ladarius Gunter was set up to fail. I know a lot of people are going to bag on him for a long time because he got bombed by Julio Jones and Dez Bryant in back-to-back weeks. Now, to be fair to Ladarius Gunter, Julio Jones does that to a lot of corners. He just did not quite the same level, but he just did the same thing to Richard Sherman last week. And Richard Sherman is, by many accounts, one of the best cornerbacks in football. At the same time, Jason, we talked, I don't remember, well, I said it after the championship game in 2014. I said it after the Arizona game last year. There have been years that I've been willing to give Dom Capers a pass. And again, I'm not blaming him. This is not blaming him for what happened yesterday, but it can be both things. The Packers have failed to give him enough tools. But at the same time, they fail to mask deficiencies. They fail to adjust when something goes wrong. Dom Capers should not be the defensive coordinator of this team anymore. And I've said that for three seasons now. I don't know how many different times a team has to break a record against the Packers in the postseason or how many times they have to finish in the bottom five of the league as far as something goes for them to make a change. They'll say they keep taking a long-term view. Well, here's the long-term view. Outside of last year, where the defense was average to slightly above, and 2010 when the defense was very good, the defense has sucked every other year. 2011, it was horrible. It was the worst in the league. 2012, it was not good. That's when they got torn apart and they had a record set against them by Colin Kaepernick in the playoffs. 2013, it was awful. Again, beaten by Colin Kaepernick in the playoffs. 2014, I guess, it was average. And they lost in the NFC Championship game because they fell apart against Seattle. Wide range of reasons they collapsed in that game, but the defense was one of them. 2015, above average defense. But, again, they need one stop after a Hail Mary, and they can't do it. And this year, defense is supposed to be one of their strengths. They had 10 of 11 preferred starters on the field yesterday. The only one that wasn't on the field was Sam Shields, and they sucked. And they were bad all season. They don't mask deficiencies at all, and the long-term view is bad. And I have next to no confidence that this defense will get any better with the current staff in place. guys are not developing. There are some good pieces in place. I think that this is a unit that is more talented than what the results show. And the argument I have made for years is that the investment does not meet – the results do not meet the investment. And at some point, someone has to be held accountable for that, whether that is the general manager for picking the players or the coaching staff coordinators for not getting the results out of those players. Ted Thompson is picking players that, in my opinion, are still talented. Haha, Clinton Dix. Nick Perry's a good player. Kenny Clark did some good stuff by the end of the year. Clay Matthews isn't a bad player. Demarius Randall took a step back, but I still think he's a good player. Quentin Rollins, same thing, didn't develop. Morgan Burnett, good player. Dayton Jones has talent. They have talented players on that defense. They're not developing. Or they're not being put in positions to succeed. Guys like Nate Palmer, Ladarius Gunner. Some of that stuff has to go a little further up than Dom Capers. And again, yesterday, he brought a pillowcase to a gunfight because the Falcons are one of the best offenses ever, statistically, and this defense is bad. But at the same time, someone has to be held accountable, and this guy shouldn't have been around for the last three seasons. At some point, the excuses have to stop. Dom Capers shouldn't be around anymore. Jason, I know one of the things you always say is, like, the Packers seem to always find a way to break streaks or be on the wrong side of history. This is another thing of being on the wrong side of history. And had the Falcons kept the pedal to the floor, if the Packers had kept the game any close, the Falcons would have set a record for quarterback passing yards and receiver receiving yards between Matt Ryan and Julio Jones in a single game in an NFC championship. And I have no doubt they finished second. And those guys, they ran the ball pretty much the entire fourth quarter. The Packers' defense was an embarrassment yesterday. And again, not all of that has to do with the coordinator. But it's been this way for a long time. And at some point, something has to change. It won't, because it never does. But it should. And it should have changed after they lost in San Francisco, or against San Francisco, in that freezer bowl 3 years ago. But what do I know? Jason, what are your thoughts on third down conversion rate, the defense as a whole, all kinds of nonsense?
So you said, just want to confirm or clarify, because I think the stat was that it was the third down conversion rate in yesterday's game by itself. It was almost 77%, because I think when you first started, your stat was throughout the postseason. So did I get that wrong? Was it through the postseason or was it just yesterday?
I read through the postseason. Let me clarify on that real quick while you say that. Let's assume yesterday's game, but I read through the postseason. But let me check.
Okay. So this whole Dom Capers thing, let's make sure that we hit on this several times throughout the offseason, because now that we've got plenty of time to talk about it, we definitely should. I said, oddly enough, after last season when the Packers' defense was actually one of the strengths of their team, that I thought they should move on from Capers, and everybody thought I was crazy because they said, wait, he's finally got this defense humming. If they come back like they did in 2015 and play like that in 2016 and the offense gets its act together, they're going to be unstoppable. So why would you mess with a good thing? And I just thought to myself, because I think you've got all these young guys – that have a lot of talent, but you've got Dom Capers who just doesn't seem to be able to get much out of them. I mean, he's been able to work with, you know, I don't even know what cliche I can throw in there. I mean, there haven't been great assets to work with or to use in big moments. And this team has come up big in some big games. The Seattle game is one of them, although Russell Wilson definitely helped him out. I think Russell Wilson might've been the best defender on the field for either team that Sunday. But nonetheless, the Packers still got six turnovers that day. And I think this is one of the reasons why, as far as Capers goes, everybody wants to give the Packers a pass is because they had nobody out there to play corner. They're, you know, Demaryius Randle is injured. He's still hurt. Quentin Rollins is just coming back. He wasn't himself. Ladarius Gunter is an undrafted free agent, so he's not good. You can't really count on him. Well, you got to where you got. It's like I said earlier, you got to the NFC Championship game with these guys. So, yes, you can. Figure it out. You might be saying, okay, well, that's not cool. You're asking somebody to squeeze orange juice out of a turnip, one of my favorite sarcastic lines of all time. But you got there. Finish the damn job. Other teams can do it. And so, unfortunately, if another team can do it, it's possible that another team can do it. And why can't that other team be the Green Bay Packers? And I just think Dom Capers' message is getting stale. We've talked about stale messages earlier this season when the Packers were 4-6. Is Mike McCarthy's message getting stale to this team? We can revisit that because I talked about how I thought McCarthy was actually a big part of the reason why this team played as badly as they did yesterday. I don't know how you don't place blame at the feet of the head coach. It's his team. Dom Capers is his coordinator. He has stuck with Dom Capers, or the organization has stuck with Dom Capers for a very long time. And I think it's been proven that either the system doesn't work as great as it used to. I don't know if you know this or not, Jacob. I say this tongue-in-cheek. But the NFL is pretty good at catching up with the trends. So you see these things come in and get hot. Remember the Wildcat? Everybody's running the Wildcat couple years ago, and that was going to be all the rage for the rest of our lifetimes. The Wildcat, you can see the Wildcat all over the place. Dolphins, everybody's running the Wildcat. Well, that was here and gone in a year. You saw Colin Kaepernick running the pistol. Now you're going to see all these big athletic cornerbacks running all over the place. Nope. Not so much. Dom Capers isn't keeping up. His scheme is kind of getting a little outdated. And I also think there's some truth to the fact that it's a complicated scheme based on everything that it asks defenders to do. And you just have too many guys that don't have enough NFL experience to execute it. There's that word, execution, which we haven't really talked about that much, Jacob, because we haven't really wanted to talk about this game because there wasn't much execution on the Packers' side of the ball either way to celebrate. But they're not executing on it. They're not able to do it because there's a lot of little nuances and communications that have to happen, and I think they did an okay job. I think you see guys like Morgan Burnett really growing up, and you know, he's kind of an expert in this defense. He gets the defense. Ha-ha Clinton Dix seems to get the defense. But Demaryius Randle just looks lost. Quentin Rollins, nope. Ladarius Gunter, maybe. You know, but if there's time, if there's an area for change, and if there's time for a change, I think it's in this area. I agree with you. I think it's on the defensive side. I think maybe the defensive coordinator situation might be where you want to make a change because you got to get more out of these guys. You mentioned all these players by name earlier, Jacob, and they're all talented players. They really are. When Dayton Jones is having a day, he has a damn day. I mean, the stat sheet lights up when he has a day. So don't tell me that you can't. If you're one of the godfathers of a particular defensive scheme, don't tell me that you can't find a way to get the most out of that guy. Clay Matthews is not playing at an elite level, and he's a whole other topic that I think we should explore at some point on another show too. But he's a good, very good football player. Why aren't you getting more out of Clay Matthews? Why is Clay Matthews still running himself off the TV screen? What is happening here? Things like that are the question marks that don't get answered year over year, and I think that's why, Jacob, you're on year three of why are we still doing this? And here I am on year two of why are we still doing this? Now, one thing I will say, and I know that the argument probably hasn't changed much because of the context of it and the facts surrounding it, but do you remember back in the beginning of the season when Sam Shields got hurt in week one and we were texting between week one and week two about the cornerback situation? We kind of you know, we had a very healthy debate about whether or not Ted Thompson dropped the ball at the cornerback position this season, because all he left in the cupboard behind Sam Shields was Demaryius Randle, Quentin Rollins. It was Ladarius Gunter, Josh Hawkins. There was no McKitten Dorlient. Dmitri Goodson was about to serve a 4-game suspension, so he wasn't even in the picture. And I'm probably, you know, Marwin Evans. I don't know if Evans was considered a cornerback or a safety. I really have no idea. So Randle and Rollins, I think, even at that point, we expected were going to be better. And even at that point, I still said, you watch. It's going to have been a big mistake that they don't have some sort of a veteran at cornerback. And we kind of went back and forth, and you just said, well, what are you supposed to do? I mean, you don't plan on Sam Shields getting hurt and not playing the rest of the season, which is true. I totally get that. But there's just certain positions that I have argued over time that you kind of have to have some savvy on. And if you look at the teams that do really, really well, there's usually a pretty solid rock star in the defensive backfield, whether it's a safety or it's a corner. So last year's Super Bowl, easy pickings. Josh Norman was with the Carolina Panthers, and you had Aqib Talib and Chris Harris Jr. Take your pick of which one you think is better for the Denver Broncos. This year, I guess, with me not even being able to name any of the starting corners, there goes my argument out the window. But I do think that that has been a position that the Packers really benefited from having some experience in typically, and I think part of the reason why is because of it's a Dom Capers defense, and they need that savvy. And so a couple weeks ago when Peanut Tillman is tweeting at Aaron Rodgers about, hey, I'm ready to run the table, I'm ready to still try to get a ring in retirement, I'm thinking to myself, okay, he has not played football in a year, and I guarantee you has no semblance of football speed or ability to cover anybody, but he's still Peanut Tillman, and he's still the exact kind of guy that if he were in football shape, I would want on my defense, because you just feel a little bit better when he's back there. So, you know, I'm not giving the pass. I'm not giving the pass anymore. I mean, I'm kind of done handing out hall passes. I'm just getting very apathetic here. I'm getting very apathetic, and I might even be getting off topic, Jacob. I'm going on a rant here, so just, you know, jump in at any point. But what's frustrating to me is I'm at the point now where, because of, and it's largely been the defense, you've cited the, you know, the playoff losses and how they've gone down. But it's getting to the point where, okay, now I don't even know how I'm going to pick. When we get to the point where we start picking next year, I don't even know if I want to do it, because it's just going to be the same crap. You know, just go ahead and put me down for 11-5 and a divisional round loss. Because that's, I mean, what else am I supposed to pick? That's what keeps happening over and over and over again. It's the same thing. It's the same formula. If it's not the same formula, it's a different formula. But, gee, the same result spits out at the end. So the follow-up everyone's going to ask us is, okay, well, who's your defensive coordinator then? And I don't know if you have an answer, Jacob. I don't. And I'm not a change for the sake of change guy, but the Packers are, you know, we've talked definition of insanity, you know, so something's got to change. Otherwise the results aren't. And that is, you know, I guess whether for good or for bad, better or worse, or fair or unfair, my finger, when it comes to all of the factors and all of the things I think are to blame and could change or should change for the Packers, it falls most squarely on Dom Capers.
To answer the question is, if somebody says, if not Dom, then who, then, I mean, I usually ask that question in terms of the head coach, and usually those answers are a little more easily found. As far as the defensive coordinator goes, you know, I know a few years ago, if you'd asked me that question, my answer would have popped right off and it would have been Rex Ryan. And now there's no way that I answer that question that way, because Rex Ryan is a caricature and he's kind of a clown, and I just don't think that would play well in Green Bay. But there were some candidates that have already kind of been spoken for elsewhere. Now, Wade Phillips just went to L.A. You've got Gus Bradley, who went to the other L.A. I mean, guys like that. But, you know, Jason, you mentioned I'm not the change for the sake of change. I'm not either. But in this case, I am. Because every year,
pretty much every year that the Packers lose in the playoffs. I saw a stat today that I think it's like in Aaron Rodgers, in the playoff losses in Aaron Rodgers' career, they give up an average of close to 37 points per game. I mean, I always say wins and losses are not a quarterback stat. That's why, right there. Like, I mean, Aaron Rodgers could average 36 points per game in a playoff start and lose most of them because they give up an average of 37 points per game when they lose in the playoffs. And that's embarrassingly bad. And this is where, you know, I mean, we got more stuff to talk about as far as the offseason goes, and this isn't an offseason show, and we'll kind of lead into the next point here because something Aaron Rodgers, speaking of him, said in the offseason, and we'll kind of lump these two questions together because we're kind of up against it as far as time goes. You know, he said after the game that he wants to make sure, and he thinks the Packers need to make sure that they are all in, quote-unquote, were his words, to win every year. And that was the most interesting thing he said in the postseason. Now, there were some other cool things about the press conference, you know, him kind of getting emotional, talking about Jordy Nelson playing with broken ribs. Kudos to Jordy about that. I have no idea how he did it. Fantastic. Jordy, I'm sure you're listening. All the respect in the world for playing with broken ribs. But that was the big thing. And, you know, the other popular thing is Aaron Rodgers' window closing? And Aaron said he didn't think so. The other argument will be that they're wasting Aaron Rodgers. So, Jason, I'm kind of lumping those two things together is, you know, what do you think of him saying about being all in? And what do you think of, what are your thoughts on, you know, the idea that they're wasting Aaron Rodgers? My answer on the wasting him thing is ask me when his career is over because, you know, obviously I don't know what the future holds. If he retired tomorrow and they only won one Super Bowl, then sure, they wasted a Hall of Fame quarterback and only won one Super Bowl. Winning more than one Super Bowl is hard. I know that. But, you know, when you only get to one, you'd like to think that you could get to more than one Super Bowl when you have a Hall of Famer playing quarterback and arguably the most talented quarterback in the history of professional football. Those are the kinds of conversations that we have about this guy. But ask me when his career is over. That's kind of what I say when it comes to those kinds of things because it's very, very possible. Aaron's 33 years old right now. Tom Brady is about to play in the Super Bowl. He's 39 years old. Peyton Manning played in the Super Bowl last year when he was 40. That's not the best argument because he was terrible. But the year before that, he was very good as 39 years old. So the elite quarterbacks tend to age well. Aaron Rodgers is an elite quarterback. I suspect he will age well. Obviously, I don't know that, but I suspect he will age well. So my answer on that is ask me when his career is over. As far as is he calling out the front office or my thought on him saying he wants to be all in every year? Do I think he's frustrated? Is he saying he wants the front office to be a little more active? I think he is a little frustrated because that's two of the last 3 years they've lost the NFC Championship game, one of which they absolutely should have won, the one in Seattle. They should have won. They outplayed the Seahawks for pretty much the entire game and did not win. And yesterday they got blown off the field. And I think Aaron understands that, you know, he talked about sense of urgency this year. Now, he can say that he doesn't think the clock is ticking, but he also understands that there's a limited number of years left in his career. He can know that the clock isn't ticking, but also understand that there is a clock, if that makes sense. So I think that I'm not asking – I say this every year. I'm not asking Ted Thompson to go out and spend money like – the Washington Redskins used to with Daniel Snyder and by, you know, Albert Haynesworth and these over the hill defenders like Deion Sanders and all these bums that were just overpaid and past their prime by the time he got them. Not asking for stuff like that, but just the way that they completely ignore acquiring talent I shouldn't say completely ignore. They do it on their terms. Julius Peppers, Ryan Pickett, Charles Woodson, Jared Cook, few and far between. Again, I'm not asking for big, big money deals. I'm asking for a guy like Jarrell Freeman, leading tackler for the Chicago Bears this year, and he missed four games. Tackles are a you know, misleading stat, but at the same time, he's a very good player. 3 years, $12 million. That's $4 million a season. Darrelle Freeman is better than Jake Ryan, Blake Martinez, and Joe Thomas. It would cost him $4 million. That's a feasible deal. Again, signing guys when you're putting players in positions to fail. See Ladarius Gunter. See Nate Palmer. Guys like that. I'm not asking for much. And you can even see that when Ted Thompson does sign free agents, they work. Latroy Guyon's been a productive player in Green Bay. Jared Cook. The Packers were a much better offense when Jared Cook was on the field. Again, not asking for a spending spree, but maybe a little bit of activity this offseason wouldn't be such a bad thing to fill a gap here or there. But that's what my thought is on Aaron Rodgers saying, you know, be all in to win every year. I think he believes that his clock isn't ticking. I think he understands that he can play for quite some time, but he understands that there is a clock. That's my thought on that. So, Jason, what are your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers wanting to be all in every year and the idea of the window that is discussed every year that the Packers don't win the Super Bowl?
A lot of good stuff there. I want to start with because my hope obviously is Aaron Rodgers plays until the wheels fall off. So if he's 33 now, and Tom Brady is playing a Super Bowl at 39 and Peyton Manning played him one at 40, that means that there's a chance that we could potentially still have 6 to 7 more years of Aaron Rodgers not only playing for the Packers, but keeping them in this hunt and being one of the biggest reasons why they're extremely competitive every year. And by the time that is over with, that will have essentially put us in a 30-year window of elite Hall of Fame quarterbackedness in Green Bay. And that is not something that we will ever be able to say again in our lifetimes. And I'm almost confident enough to bet my house on that. So start with that. Secondly, you mentioned some of the free agents that Ted Thompson has signed. I kind of have to throw a little funny barb out there, but Jacob, did you realize when he signed Latroy Guyon that we were getting a two-way player? I mean, did you know that we were getting a defensive and an offensive guy at the same time?
Little did I know that we were getting a backup offensive guard at the same time. And for those, I won't say it on the show, but check out some of the things Latroy Guyon's dad has said about Latroy Guyon. There's a pretty funny quote in there, so check that out too.
I always wondered when you get into an emergency situation. Yeah. I mean, at that point, all you could do is laugh because the game's over. I mean, the Packers season is over. You got Latroy Guyon playing guard. So it's like, you know, I almost wanted to turn the TV back on just to see that. And I always wondered, you know, they talk about the emergency quarterback. Who's the emergency quarterback if all three guys go down or all two guys go down? But I've always wondered how they decide, you know, who's gonna play guard or who's gonna be the inside linebacker if they literally run out of bodies? Or I mean, I guess that's easy, throw a safety in there. But you know, these tougher positions to cover, I guess. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers means what he says when he says he wants his team to go all in because he's sick. I'm gonna do it for a second time in the show, and I guess I apologize, folks. He's sick of the same shit every year. And let me just remind those of you, let's just go through a little history here of Packers postseason, if we shall. We've done it a couple times, but I want to just go through a reminder. Jacob, you kind of did this earlier, so I'm sort of repeating you. But just a quick reminder, okay? 2010 Super Bowl, we all know that. 2009, Aaron Rodgers, the strip sack fumble, game over. From that point forward, you got 2011, game ends, Aaron Rodgers is on the sideline. 2012, game ends, Aaron Rodgers is on the sideline. 2013, game ends, Aaron Rodgers is on the sideline. 2014, Offense didn't have a great day. Still, when the game ended, Aaron Rodgers, ball cap, sideline. Last year in Arizona, in overtime, never saw the ball. Ball cap, sideline. This year, not even in the game. Sideline. Yeah, hell yeah, Aaron Rodgers wants this team to go all in. I think he would just like one damn chance to be on the field when the game ends with a chance to win it. Because that seems to be the Packers' best chance of advancing in the playoffs is for the offense to score last second where the other team has no chance to do anything else with the ball. Tired of being in a ball cap on the sideline. So, yes, don't even think twice about what Aaron Rodgers is trying to say through that comment right there. Open up your freaking checkbook and bring me pieces that are going to win me a championship. It's not difficult to see what a winning formula is. And it's not, like you've said several times during this show, Jacob, it's not a Nate Palmer, an inside linebacker. It's not A.J. Hawk, 3 years too many. It's not Ladarius Gunter all season on the outside. Regardless of whether you get thrown into that situation unexpectedly or not, you got to prep for it. I saw some tweets today that were like, hey, wouldn't mind seeing the Packers spend some extra money in free agency as they do every year. But they were saying, and I'm not even talking marquee money, it's like I don't even need a starter at corner, but just bring in like a third guy. Bring in like a third guy or your number two guy or your even your fourth guy, but make it a vet. Make it somebody who's got some playoff experience. Michael Rodney, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, was tweeting up a storm today about the team and some of the deficiencies, and I think one of his points was, and if it wasn't him, I apologize to whoever made it because I agreed with it. The Packers need a beast at inside linebacker. And I like Jake Ryan a lot, and I like what Blake Martinez has to offer. And God bless everything that is holy if either one of those two guys turns into a beast. I don't think either one of them is going to go beast mode. But there are just certain positions on a team that you know need to be rock star. You mentioned Jarrell Freeman, Jacob, and don't forget, he was good for the Bears, but he also missed four games due to a suspension. So I know I'm getting into semantics because of his specific situation. I think you're more speaking to that type of player. I don't think you have a Superman crush on Jarrell Freeman in particular. I think you were just citing him as an example. And I agree. I think you have to look at certain areas on the field where, like I said before, that defensive back, who's going to be your Leroy Butler? Who's going to be your Nick Collins? Those are obviously very special players. The Packers were very fortunate to have. Ironically, both of them wore 36. You would have thought some of that might have transferred over to Ladarius Gunter this year. Never did I get my big play that I called for from him. I certainly didn't get it yesterday. So that was a failed experiment. But it's got to be different this offseason. And for that reason, and this is another topic for another show, I now have to hope that the hierarchy and the chain of command and the pecking order in which the Packers do their personnel acquisitions, decision making, change, drafting, free agent signings are not solely in the hands of Ted Thompson, because it's time to get real here. It's time to get with it. And if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm absolutely punching a hole in a wall. Might go back to the exact same spot OBJ punched. It's been patched up. I might go back and throw another hole right there. Might be a little easier to punch in a spot where the wall's already been compromised. Might be a little easier on the hand, because we all know Aaron's a righty and he's going to be punching with his throwing hand. If the Packers don't do something different this year, and I'm not just talking about a Jared Cook. They signed Jared Cook, and that was a fantastic signing. You mentioned the other guys, Pickett, Woodson, obviously. Woodson, once-in-a-lifetime type of deal. But those kind of guys. Julius Peppers until yesterday. I mean, I don't even know if Julius Peppers, I know it was foggy and the plane had trouble taking off. I think he might have gotten stuck in Milwaukee. Those are the types of free agent signings that Ted's kind of reserved himself for, and they've worked out. So you have a history of it working. Why don't you try being a little bit more risky and maybe get one extra guy? If you just bring in one extra guy a year, it's almost like how they tell you, you know, hey, if you save an extra $50 a month, or if you save an extra penny a day, they make it some very simple sounding, you know, equation. If you save an extra 10 cents a day, you can retire 2 years earlier. If you bring in one more player, maybe that's the guy. Maybe that's the one that gets you over the hump. And I'm tired. I think Aaron Rodgers is being wasted at this point. I was the one that said they should win yesterday's game. I'm not giving them a pass for yesterday. I don't want to hear anybody else spewing the crap of they were playing with house money. They were lucky to be there. They had no business being in the NFC Championship game. They didn't have a chance to win that game. Chicago Bear Jew. I interact with him a ton on Twitter. I know some people think he's a meathead. He actually has some pretty decent football knowledge and content when he wants to be smart and not talk about Packers stock. Said the Packers never had a chance. Just let it go. I don't believe that. I think that's garbage. That's a crap mentality. They did have a chance. They should have won that game yesterday. They have Aaron Rodgers. They had a chance to win any game and beat any team on the field in this league as of today, and that includes the Atlanta Falcons, because I think you play them five times, I think the Packers are going to win at least one because of Aaron Rodgers, and that includes the New England Patriots. Both of those teams are going to the Super Bowl. So at this point, now that there are not double-digit years left in Aaron Rodgers' career, and because he's a mobile quarterback, when are those legs going to start to kind of slow down a little bit? I mean, Steve Young did it pretty well in his later years, but the argument was made that Steve Young didn't take as many hits as Aaron Rodgers has taken, which I find interesting because of the rules being so much more slanted towards quarterbacks. And I was in the house when Steve Young got knocked the F out on Monday Night Football by the Arizona Cardinals, Aeneas Williams. And I think that was it for him. I don't think he ever played again. So I was in the house for that. So if you only have 4 to 5 more years of elite Aaron Rodgers, which, like I said when I started this whole thing, man, if he plays 6 or 7, we're very lucky. Then, yes, every year that they don't win a Super Bowl, you are wasting Aaron Rodgers. The window is closing. It is closing. Don't tell me that it's not, because it is. Father Time is undefeated. Every year, on the same date that Aaron Rodgers was born, the year that he was born, he turns a year older. You know this, right, everybody? This is a rhetorical question I'm asking. You do realize that he does get a year older every year. It's not like he's got some freeze time button and we can just buy 3 or 4 extra years. They got to win. Because do you want one more Super Bowl? When you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, when you look at how many times Tom Brady has been standing on a gosh darn stage after the AFC Championship game and how many Super Bowls he's played in and how many Super Bowls he's won. Are you okay with Aaron Rodgers just getting to a second one? Maybe not winning it, but getting to it, or even if he does win a second one? I know I sound very greedy right now, but give me 3 at least. I don't know what your take is on that, Jacob, but the window is closing, absolutely. They should have won yesterday. They didn't. It was a huge disappointment. This team needs to retool, and like Aaron Rodgers says, he said retool a bit. I think he was being kind. I think they've got a lot of work to do. I just hope the right people are making the decisions when they do it.
Some of that remains to be seen. The word Aaron Rodgers used was reload, so that, you know, we talked about the free agents. We'll talk about all that stuff at a later date. This show was mostly for raw emotion and things of that sort. So, Jason, this was fun, kind of. Not for the right reasons. I would love to confirm your theory as to who was tweeting up a storm today. However, for saying that someone was not right as often as they think they are, I am blocked by the person that you have theorized. Therefore, I cannot tell you if that is what it was or not. So that's my take on that situation as far as your theory as to who was tweeting. So I got nothing on that. But my take on winning more Super Bowls, I want them to win every freaking year. So I'm envious of Tom. I freaking hate Tom Brady, and I love him at the same time. It's a weird relationship I have with him. I appreciate his greatness. He's, in my opinion, the most accomplished, greatest, whatever word you want to use, quarterback of all time. This is his 7th Super Bowl, and he's playing to win his 5th. He already has 4. I mean, he's an all-time great, and I'm jealous of that. And call that whatever you want. You can hate Tom Brady all you want, and I understand that. But the only reason people hate Tom Brady is the same reason they hate the Yankees and the Lakers and the Celtics and all those other teams. It's because they win, and it's because he's won the most championships, and he's the poster child with that team, Bill Belichick included with that, because they win. So long show, which I would have never guessed was going to happen, but that will do it. We will be here all off season long, I can promise you that, talking about all kinds of stuff. Our next show, we'll talk hopefully a little happier tone, awards, kind of set up the off season stuff like that. But that will do it for today. Check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason at Jason Perrone. Super Bowl 51 will be the Patriots and the Falcons, not the Packers. Unfortunately, that sucks. But as you can see, the sun came up today. I want to thank you guys for listening in all season long. It was a joy to do the show for you guys. The season was fun. Unfortunately, the Packers came up a little short, but without you guys, this show does not exist. So thank you to our listeners. You guys have been great all year. Interacting with you guys is great. It's fun. Like I told you guys before the Giants game, you know, we know we're never going to be famous. We do this show to interact with you guys. So you guys make this show what it is, and we appreciate it. So thank you guys for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.